independent in thought and punk rock in life. It's the Chad Benson Show.
I'm from California, born and raised here, spent most of my life here, minus a decade or so in Europe, tolling around, playing soccer and whatnot. The state is the first line of resistance as far as they're concerned. They're going to do everything they can in the state to resist Donald Trump, and there's going to be a new governor. Moonbeam's going to be stepping away after his 59th year in office. And who will be the new governor? Well, we're going to find out sooner rather than later. Joining us now is a man who is running on the Republican side of things, calls himself a Jack Kemp-style Republican. John Cox, thanks so much for coming on today.
Thank you for having me, Chad. Appreciate it.
So here you are in California, and I say this all the time. This is the bastion of insanity when it comes to politics. It's a one-party state. Meg Whitman said in an article that running for governor was literally like running into a wall over and over again. And yet you're ready to take up the mantle on the Republican side and try to ascend to the throne of governor of California.
Well, it's because I have a plan, and I also think that California voters have had enough of the corruption, the special interest control of Sacramento. I think they're ready for a change. They know this state is got the worst business climate in the country. It's the number one judicial hellhole. It's number one in poverty and welfare cases, along with a third of the people on Medi-Cal. They know that this is not sustainable, Chad, and I think they'll be looking for a businessman to right the ship.
You know, in this climate nowadays, the political climate, John, nationwide, worldwide, but nationwide, we are definitely more divided than ever. And in this day and age, with the world of Trump, how do Republicans navigate through some of that stuff? Because especially here, more so, you do have a lot of people here who are not fans of Trump. He didn't get a ton of votes, even though he got like 5 million votes. When you think about how big we are, that's a drop in the bucket.
Well, what we need to focus on, Chad, is the fact that 19 states around the country have businessmen who are now governors. And they're finding, and by the way, a lot of those, Chad, are in blue states. Maryland has Larry Hogan, a conservative who, by the way, is the most popular governor in the country with a 75% approval rating. Charlie Baker in Massachusetts, another really blue state. He has about a 72% approval rating. He's a Republican, a businessman. I think people are open to logical business type approaches that don't involve the corrupt pay-to-play that is present in Sacramento. And that's what I'm going to be running against, by the way, Chad, the corruption, the pay-to-play politics that people are really kind of sick of.
Talking to John Cox, who's running for governor here in California. And John, you know, I you're right about that. The corruption is everywhere and the insanity is everywhere. And in California, it's a little different because of the fact that we are a one party state. And I tell people, look at what California does in the resistance movement, but look at the insanity of the fact that we seem to be pretty much a one party state. And that has to, I mean, it drives me crazy knowing that my vote virtually counts for nothing.
Actually, I want to dispute that just mildly, Chad. California has elected four Republican governors. Count them, four. Reagan, Wilson, Duke Magey, and Schwarzenegger. And you may argue about whether Schwarzenegger was really a Republican, but he ran under the Republican Party label. And so, you know, we've had a lot more Republican governors than we've had Democrats. And I really believe that most people in California want opportunity. They want a chance. They want a free market that gives them a chance. They don't want a check. They don't want a handout. As you said, I'm a Jack Kemp Republican. I believe in a hand up, not a handout. But the important thing, too, Chad, is that I'm also a small businessman. I know how the government in California just piles regulation and taxes on small business. And we've got to have small business because that's the engine of growth and opportunity.
Oh, absolutely. 110%. So we switch from the business side of things because you're a businessman. You understand the regulations here, California Air Resource Boards, all those kind of things that just come down on small businesses. And then we look to stuff where socially the fight in a lot of ways is going to be on and a sanctuary state. The idea of being a sanctuary state, John, Because this, a lot of people around the country are looking at this as well, is like, are they really going to try to become a sanctuary state? And that's just insane.
Well, it's all about fundraising. It's all about politics, Chad. You know, we elect our public officials to actually work together. The idea that one group of politicians in the state are going to go to war with another set of politicians in Washington is just the height of stupidity. But I'll tell you why they're doing this, Chad. They're doing it to raise money. The best way to raise money is to scare people or to make them angry. And the sanctuary state movement is all about making people who are here, in an undocumented fashion, making them scared, and then making other people angry about it. What we got to do is foster a solution. We got to obey the law. But what we ought to do is have a guest worker program that allows us to have people that will do work, and maybe they want to go back to Mexico or someplace else, some other part of the time. But, you know, they should, we should have a legal program that allows them to do that.
Talking to John Cox, who's running for governor here in California, you talk about a guest worker program. And, you know, if let's say you win and you get in there and you probably beat, I don't know who's in the lead right now, probably Gavin Newsom. But you get in there and you're going to have to work with the and this is when I talk about the one party state is, yes, we've elected governors. But a lot of times with the supermajority, they're just sitting there in some ways. And that to me is, how do you reach out across the aisle in a progressive state like this and deal with people who know that, hey, you know what, you can veto all you want, we're still going to override you.
You got a great point there, Chad, and that's why I'm running to not only be a governor, but I'm also going to change the legislature. You may know that I'm also sponsoring a ballot initiative, which Art Laffer and Bill Simon called the greatest idea they've ever heard of to break the lock that the special interests have on Sacramento. It's called the Neighborhood Legislature. It polls at 75-80%, and I think it'll poll even more popular when people hear about its impact and that it's going to be able to really take power away from the special interests and give it back to the people, which is how our founders intended it.
You know, you talk about giving it back to the people, and we talked about Schwarzenegger earlier. Schwarzenegger came in full guns blazing, looked like he was really going to do something, and then when he found out the hard way that in this state the unions run so much of it and they crushed him for a lot of the things that he wanted to do, he seemed to, for all intents and purposes, just to no longer be the governor. He tucked tail and just kind of gave up.
I always say to audiences that the legislature terminated the Terminator. And you're absolutely right. So that's why we have to change the structure. Right now, the reason why all these funders have control of the state legislature is because the districts are so darn huge. It's all about money. It's all about TV and mail. The neighborhood legislature cuts those districts down into little tiny pieces. So, yes, there's thousands of districts, but they end up sending a small group to Sacramento, the 120 like we have now. And in doing that kind of a structure, we will take money out of the equation and really get ourselves a legislature that'll work with me as governor.
And that's what you need. You need somebody who's going to work with you, because this, you know, when you sit around and you see California and the whole resistance movement and all of these kind of things, and I think for a lot of states out there, they're looking at this as almost a tester fish to see if it works so they can resist, you know, D.C. and the Fed funds. When you see all of this and you think, how am I going to work with Kevin DeLeon? How am I going to work with a lot of these people who just seem to want to do what they want to do and run rampant? And how do you reach out to somebody like that, knowing full well that they have in their mind, I can do whatever I want?
Well, what you got to do is you got to get a group of legislators in there that will work with you. I mean, let's face it, Mr. DeLeon and others are like him, are just professional fundraisers. They do what the big unions and the environmental groups and the trial lawyers and big business, frankly, to tell them to do. There was just a bill that gave AT&T a big break. You know, that's what it's all about in Sacramento. You got to break that lock. And I got to tell you, Chad, the only way to do that is with a structural change, which is what the neighborhood legislature is. And so people, you know, in 2018, they're going to have a choice. Elect a businessman who knows how to meet a budget, knows how to get things done, knows how to cut the waste and fat in government, which there's a lot of in California. And at the same time, we'll get a legislature that'll actually work with the governor and not fight him every step of the way like they did with Schwarzenegger.
Crazy indeed. John Cox is his name. He's running for governor of California. Wish you all the best. You can go to johncoxforgovernor.com. Check everything out about you. We appreciate you coming on. We look forward to talking to you further on down the road. You're on the campaign trail. And when you get down here to Southern California or up here to Southern, you know, I think you're down in San Diego, up here in Orange County, stop by and say hi.
I will do that. And people can also find out about the neighborhood legislature at neighborhoodlegislature.com. We're all collecting signatures right now. We have about half of them already, and it'll be on the ballot in 2018, along with my name as governor, and we'll transform politics in California. We'll get this state back on track, and we'll make it the golden state once more.
Thank you so very much. Look forward to it. You know, it's tough, man. And I want to have him on today because, you know, this is a guy who is that kind of Jack Kemp Republican, which is, I think, if you're going to move forward in this world, Jack Kemp was very much a moderate before there was moderates, a guy that was willing to not only talk about things, but go into the inner cities, do those kind of things that Democrats and Republicans alike both respected him. And in this state, we are a tester fish. We are. We are essentially a progressive bastion, and to have somebody who's going to come out and try to do something and knowing full well that you're going up against a massive, massive money machine that are the special interest groups, the unions, all these things, it's tough. It really is tough. You know, you've got the likes of Moonbeam, who's our governor now, but what Moonbeam does, remember, California is the sixth largest economy, not in the country, in the world. And how it goes at times is how the country can go. And with the things that it's doing and the way that it pushes things, there is, you know, a need for some sort of change. And people are looking out here to see, hey, if this resistance movement happens, if California becomes a sanctuary state, if California loses funding because of that sanctuary state, all of these other states that are progressive are looking at this thing. Can we do the same thing? And can we survive? Text the program 323-538-2423, 323-538-2423. What's next? Next, Chad Benson Show.
It's not that he's particularly intuitive or even psychic. He's just weird this way. It's What's Next with Chad Benson.
What's next? For Kid Rock. Touched on it a bit yesterday. Said, don't sleep on me. I'm going to do this. Going to have a big announcement coming. Well, guess what, kids? Elizabeth Warren's chiming in. What? Yeah. She's sounding the alarm with her Democratic base, which means she's raising money. That's really what it is when I sound the alarm for something, it's because I need money for something. I need money. She goes, I know a lot of people are thinking this is some sort of joke, right? Warren wrote in an email blast. Subject line, Kid Rock, Republican, Michigan. Well, she said, maybe this is all a joke, but we all thought Donald Trump was joking when he rode the escalator at Trump Tower and announced his campaign, too. And sure, maybe this is just a marketing gimmick for a new album or tour, but we all thought Donald was just promoting his reality TV show, too. I love it. By the way, Kid Rock has a lot of different stances. He's pretty moderate when it comes to social issues, right? Doesn't care who you love, even though he's an ordained minister. He says, look, I wouldn't choose it, but I would never tell a woman what she should or shouldn't do with her body. And he's from Detroit. He gives tons of money back to that city. Thinks it's a blank canvas right now. It's a place to be, it's a place for people to be. I don't think this is a joke like she is, you know, she's fundraising, but I think this is going to surprise some people. I don't know if he's going to cut his hair. I hope not. But what's next is we're in for something interesting with this. And I love interesting. I don't care how right you are in life or how wrong you are. Be interesting. Be interesting. Because right and wrong that are boring, they're just that boring. People that are interesting, people don't care what they are. And I think he's interesting. And I think he may be able to bring some stuff and shake some stuff up. That's what's next. Senator Rock, I hope. So awesome. That is so awesome. People texting in saying, I see it now, Chad, how California is a testing ground for the resistance. It is. It is. People are looking because California is so vocal about it. Other places may say they want to try something, but they're not loud about it. California is in the face of the federal government telling them, we're going to make this a sanctuary state. We're going to do all of this stuff right in front of you, and you can't stop us, and we're going to fight you tooth and nail on every single thing, tooth and nail. We are not going to give in to you at all, and they're waiting to find out if that hurts them. That's what they're waiting to find out. How much can you resist? And the sanctuary state thing is a big thing. It's a very big thing. And I don't think that this is going anywhere quietly. I think this thing is going to ramp up. It's going to get louder and louder. And it's going to be a story that's going to be national because you're going to have the state that is so powerful against the federal government, but really against Donald Trump. Because that's what it is about. It's about being against Donald Trump, who he is, what he stands for, what he represents, white privilege, blah, blah, blah. It's the same old crap that gets spun all day. Chad at ChadBensonShow.com. You want to email the show old style. Text us 323-538-2423. 323-538-2423. Miley Cyrus. She's changing her ways, and it's sweets, not the streets, that are killing people, and a lawsuit aims to rectify that. Chad Benson Show.
The Chad Benson Show.
Independent in thought and punk rock in life. It's the Chad Benson Show.
This morning, a major revelation about that meeting between Donald Trump Jr. and a Russian lawyer during the campaign aimed at getting dirt on Hillary Clinton. Now, NBC News has learned more about who else was in that room. A Russian-American lobbyist, a former Soviet counterintelligence officer, suspected by some U.S. officials of having ongoing ties to Russian intelligence. NBC News is not naming that lobbyist who denies any current ties to Russian spy agencies. His presence likely to be of interest to investigators.
There you go. More Donald Jr. stuff. Lay it out there. Still no there there. Now, doesn't mean there may not be there there down the road, but at this moment, at this time, I see nothing that says, hey, there was mass collusion. There was collusion of any kind. And that the entire election was rigged. I don't see any of that. What I see are poor choices, not even in taking the meeting, but in not disclosing all of the things that you needed to disclose at the time you needed to disclose them. Because what that does is it makes people question even more what was going on, what was said, really.
The lawyer, Natalia Veselnitskaya, acknowledged to NBC News she was accompanied by someone, but declined to identify him. The president, before Bastille Day celebrations in Paris, defending his son.
My son is a wonderful young man. He took a meeting with a Russian lawyer, not a government lawyer, but a Russian lawyer.
So there you go. Took a meeting with a Russian lawyer, not a government lawyer. People will say, well, no. This was more than just that. This wasn't just this. It's deeper. It's a It is what it is at this moment, at this time. Can we all just step back and say, until you show me they're there, I don't see anything else that we should be talking about at this moment in time with this. I'm not saying that over the weekend something may not break. I'm not saying that there's not an email chain somewhere. I'm not saying there's not something that ties the Kremlin with Don Jr. or somebody further on down the campaign. But smoking gun in the president's hand is not there. You're going to see what you want to see. If you're progressive, if you're on the left, you think, oh, all of this stuff, just like people on the right saying those 30,000 emails had all kinds of classified stuff in it. It's everybody's going to see what they want to see. But I live in a world of facts, and I want to see the facts, and I want to see the evidence that shows me they're there. That's what I want to see. Why all of the other people out there worry about crap like this, why all of the other people out there play the political world of craziness when it comes to something like this. There's a lawsuit going on that is very, very, very interesting. I don't think it's going to go anywhere. I don't. I think it's eventually going to be tossed out. But black pastors are suing Coca-Cola and the American Beverage Association, claiming that manufacturers knowingly deceived customers about the health risk of sugar-sweetened beverages at an enormous cost to the community. And what they're saying is it's the sweets, not the streets, that are killing people. And they're right about that. They're absolutely right about that. We worry about terrorism. We worry about a lot of these other things. But do you realize that heart disease, stroke, diabetes, the cost to society is tremendous? And where we once were to where we are now in our consumption is crazy.
1915, the Coca-Cola company introduced its first standardized bottle out of Atlanta after they figured out how to keep glass from exploding. It was 6.5 ounces, and if you consumed one of those every day for a year, that would be worth about 8 pounds of fat per year. By 1955, when sugar rationing was over after World War II, they introduced the 10-ounce bottle, the first one found in vending machines.
So we started out, little 6-ounce bottle, now we're at the 10-ounce bottle. It's growth. Sugar's inside of there. I believe if they found sugar today, getting through the FDA process would be virtually impossible. Same thing with caffeine. If they discovered caffeine, that thing's never getting found. Tobacco, they discovered today, it's not. The lobbyist groups are huge. They're not going anywhere. But I get why they're doing this. I get why they're doing this. I do. I understand that. Who drinks soda the most? Whites, about 15.7%. Blacks, about almost 21%. Hispanics, 22%. Other, 10.7%. So it's not like it's a massive disparity between all of the groups, and that's how you have to break stuff down in this day and age. It can't just be this, this, and this. No, it's got to be, you know, okay, let's break it down by color, and I get it. I get it. But it's choices, right? It's choices. There are choices out there in life that you make. And one of them is how you consume and what you consume food-wise.
1960, we got up to the 12-ounce can, but the single unit of measure currently is the 20-ounce bottle. As it turns out, there are 2.5 8-ounce servings in that bottle. No one gets 2.5 8-ounce servings out of that bottle. A single serving. And of course, we have the 7-Eleven, Big K, Thirstbuster, Big Gulp, whatever you want to call it, 44 ounces. If you drank one of those every day, that would be worth 57 pounds of fat per year.
57 pounds of fat per year. Consumption. You're choosing it, though. You're choosing to consume. You're choosing to consume. And that's the big thing here. If I'm a judge and I'm looking at this case, nobody is putting a gun to people's heads and saying you must consume this. Realizing that through time, the more that we started to realize what sugar and a lot of these other things do and how people, you know, can, you know, some people say they become addicted to things like this. I get it. I look at this though, and I still think it is about choices and the choice that you make.
The question is, what allowed this to happen? And the answer is two things. One, sugar became cheap, and sugar's addictive. And the more sugar they add to our food, the more we buy it. And they know it. It's a business strategy.
Yeah, 110%. It is a business strategy. Every business wants to get you addicted to their product. Every single business wants to get you addicted. The problem is, for a lot of people out there, we get addicted to something and it could end up eventually killing us. The cost of obesity in this country, we measure it in a lot of different ways. Cost of health care. Think about this. If we were half the size, right? If we lost even 30% of our weight that we needed to lose, not 100%, not even 50%. If we lost 30%, we would benefit tremendously. Cost of health insurance would go down. A lot of that stuff would happen. Obesity is that, to me, when I look at stuff that's epidemic, you look at the opioid epidemic and drugs, you look at the poverty epidemic that's out there and how that continues to be a circle over and over again that seems to be not only never ending, but it seems to be getting deeper and deeper. And you look at obesity, which strikes everybody. We're a large and in charge country, and things have continued to grow over and over again when it comes to our food, our portion size, but that's also a product of us wanting more, right? We want it. Nobody forces people to do this. For people who don't have a lot of money, consuming fast food, junk food, whatever it is, it's cheap. For people who are very, very busy, it's cheap. Study came out the other day. Rich and poor alike both like fast food. Why? It's convenience. It's convenience. You work all day, the last thing you want to do is go home and cook. Because that's just another hour and a half out of your life when you still have other things you have to do. You're on the go. What do you want to do? You're going to consume something that's not good for you. But it's about choices. And while they have the lawsuit, and I understand why they're doing that, in the end, it's about choices. You can make healthier choices. You can go through a drive-thru and say, you know what, I'm going to have a cheeseburger, but I'm not getting fries, and I'll get a water instead of. That's a choice you can make. I made a choice 3 years ago. I wasn't going to drink soda anymore, and I haven't. For once in a while, I may have a Sprite, but I haven't had a Diet Coke or a Coke in forever, and I'm done. I won't do it anymore. I made a choice not to do that. Tried to eat healthier. I went out today. What did I do? I went and played soccer for an hour, ran around. I made a choice that rather than spend my lunch doing, you know, eating some junk and this and the other, I was going to make a solid choice and go out and work out. Making choices like this, you can't look at somebody and legislate those kind of choices. Imagine if we just said, here's the deal. We're going to start going out and issuing tickets to people that are obese and telling them, you've got to get down to X, Y, and Z. Otherwise, we're going to start to fine you for every pound you're overweight. And not even pound. We're going to look at the body fat. Because you may be 6'2", 250 pounds, but you have 7% body fat because you work out all the time. Well, that's not very fair, right? But you may be 5'8", 240 pounds, and you may have 25% body fat. We want you to get that down to about 15, maybe 12 would be good, all right? Otherwise, we're going to fine you. Oh, Chad, that'd be horrible. Yeah, it would be ridiculous. It's about choices. And no matter how much that we tell people, don't smoke, don't drink in excess, don't do this, people will still do it. It's choices. People make choices. You can't legislate that away. No matter how much you tax, no matter how much you threaten, no matter how much you tell somebody, we're getting rid of the 44 ounces and all you can get is 10 ounces, it's still choices. And you can sue, but I guarantee you the people that are obese, the people who have heart attacks, the people who have chronic diabetes and health issues when it comes to their heart, the people that are that have strokes and all that, it's not just soda. It is so many other things that go into making them that way. I'm not one to talk, but I work out. I try to bust my butt. I need to eat better. I'm in a better situation now. with our new studio and the way that things are, my new house, and that I can now cook out of the house. It's been 5 years since I've been able to cook out of my own house because I didn't have a place. I just had a small little studio apartment. But I made that choice to do that. But I believe it's about choice. Would be funny, though, if we had like a fat police just roaming around. And instead of roo, it would be a tuba. And like, oh, jeez. We have to take a hilarious picture of you. And then we're going to come back and they weigh you. And they don't even weigh you in one of those things. They just have like this, like a flatbed where they just kind of pick you up. And they're like, Chad, that's mean. No. It's funny. Laugh at it. Understand, though, the cost of obesity in this country, not just when it comes to healthcare dollars, but lost man hours when it comes to work, lost productivity, even when you're at work, is massive, is absolutely massive. Kind of funny that it's massive. 844-DIG-CHAD, 844-344-2423, chat at chadbensonshow.com. You can text the program, 323-538-2423. 323-538-2423. Also email us and follow us along at Chad Benson Show on the Twitter. Say what? Chad Benson Show.
You call it ridiculous. We call it reality with a twist. Say what?
Say what? Ravens are smart. They can plan for tomorrow. Millennials cannot. But Ravens can. According to a new study, apparently they're, and they've always been, if you've ever watched a Raven, they've always been kind of known as the sharpest of the birds. And they plan. They plan. They look out and they plan. They're like, what's going on? We got stuff, building a house. I got a 401k. Got all things going on, man. I'm planning. Millennials like, dude, I'm not planning for tomorrow, man. I'm living for today, bro. I'm so living for today, man. You have no idea. And the Ravens like, wow, you are just dumb as a box of rocks, man. You should plan for tomorrow. Plan for tomorrow. Wah, wah. I found this interesting. Miley Cyrus came out and she got a new song out. Take a little listen to this little clip.
TV debut of her new song Malibu at the Billboard Music. Miley Cyrus returning to the spotlight with a breezy new single Malibu after a months-long self-imposed media blackout. An epic follow-up to her breakup anthem Wrecking Ball about her split with fiancé Liam Hemsworth. The new track confirming the duo is back on. Last week, the star told Billboard magazine, why not put the power back in my relationship and say, this is how I feel. Those feelings now fueling what many believe is a strong contender for Song of the Summer.
And because it's Song of the Summer, she's getting a lot of play out there. And one of the things that she's talking about is the fact that she said, look, you know what? I was sexualized. And it felt really uncomfortable. Now, she did it to herself. Let's be real. She did it to herself when it came to doing what she did in the, was it the MTV Music Awards, when she went out with Robin Thicke and she did the twerking. And, you know, she sexualized herself. She put herself out there, the makeup, the dolly face, the whole nine yards. But one of the other things she did say is, you know what should have disturbed people even more was the fact that I had a bunch of grown and old men telling me how I should dress, what I should wear, and what I should look like at 11 and 12. Well, you know, you've been around showbiz a long time. Here's the thing. You can't use sex to sell and then at the same time say, that's not right. You know what I mean? Like, and I see it all the time. You know, you go on Facebook. How many people out there are so desperate for likes and views that they'll put themselves in horrible situations, or they'll, you know, they'll kind of, you know, hey, look at me, I'm only wearing a t-shirt, I'm bending over, and then somebody says something and they're like, I can't believe you said that. That's, you're using sex to get attention. You're using sex to sell something. This is what happens in a situation like that. You can't do that and not expect people to say something. I'm just saying, you can't do that. Sex sells. You use it until you don't want to use it anymore. The Kardashians figured that out a long time ago. They figured it out that we can be popular based on the fact that people like us and fantasize about us, and we'll use sex as our weapon. But when they say, oh, I just feel like I'm a piece of meat. No, you made yourself that piece of meat. Nobody put a gun to your head. Ariel Winter's doing the same thing right now. So don't be offended when a guy says you got a nice ass or that's a great rack, when you want everybody to look at your rack and your nice ass. And then when somebody says something, you're like, oh, my God, I didn't think. No. No. Sorry. Doesn't work that way. Does not work that way. Text the program 323-538-2423, 323-538-2423. People texting in about the fat police. There's not really a fat police, but it would be funny. People giving their ideas on how we could get America thin again. Why get America great again when we should get America thin again? Then we'll be greater-er and thinner-er. Chad Benson Show.
This is the Chad Benson Show.